Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, what's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz here. And what's happening, everybody? Of course, we knew the Fed would do their usual, and you know, no surprise. But I really want to talk about Tuesday afternoon. You know, I didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, but you know, Tuesday afternoon, of course, we had Twitter pre-announced their earnings, and of course Twitter got clocked. Now for me personally, it cost me a little bit, but nothing serious. But what really irks me, what really pisses me off, is everywhere you go today there is a zillion regulations. You've got in the banking, you've got Dodd-Frank, you've got no more community banks. Why? Because they can't loan anybody money, because the legislators, the regulators are up there, you know what, sticking to them every day, telling them what they can and can't do. And, you know, these companies that are out there, they know. Now, you don't think that Twitter did not release that on purpose. They can tell me the story all day long that it was an accident. But who's the accident by? You think maybe their accountants let put it out there. Do we really believe that it wasn't done intentionally? Let's think about that. I mean, they knew they were going to have bad earnings, and if they release them after the market closes, which is what they were scheduled for, well, guess what happens? The stock gets clocked probably worse, because when they release it into markets that are not liquid or into after the close, they're going to have everybody in a panic all night. And what's going to happen in the morning is everybody's going to come in running and want to sell, sell, sell. So what they had to have is they had to come up with a plan to say, well, let's see, we better figure out a way to release these earnings early, because we know that they're going to suck and we're going to be in trouble, and we don't want to lose all of our value overnight. So we have to make up some story to get these earnings released early so that we can get them out into a liquid market and let them trade. And then if that happens, at least it'll stem the tide and stem the bleeding, and we won't have to worry about what else happens. Now, we're going to hear, and you'll hear stories over the next few days. It was an accident. It wasn't supposed to happen. I don't know who did it. What happened? I don't know. And this is the problem, because everybody in this industry knows that compliance runs up everybody's behind with every stinking problem. Yet somehow a major report due out from a major company somehow accidentally slipped out. Kind of like when Bank of America misplaced that $5 billion last year in their balance sheet. So are they actually going to tell us that they know that there's a problem, that they didn't know that they were going to create a certain market? And of course, they did release the earnings early, and they did halt trading on the stock, and they did get it open before the end of trading, and then subsequently the stock fell about 9 points. Now, all that is fine, with the exception of, why didn't they do what IBM did a few months ago and just say, you know what, we're going to change the time, we're going to open them in the morning? Because then everybody would have known that bad news was coming, but you would have had liquidity, and they wouldn't have caught everybody off guard, because there are some people that might have exited before earnings. Some people trade that way. They don't hold stocks over earnings. Okay, so now they bring something out in the middle of the day, and you don't think that somebody probably wasn't shorting that stock, like there wasn't some other inside information. You know, we always think that there's nothing going on, and of course, if something goes on, somebody always knows. Now, my question to you is, I mean, I happen to be privy to some information about some of the trade, not what they did, but I saw some of the trading going on, and they were picking off orders as they were going down. Now, you mean to tell me that somebody didn't know and they didn't want that number to come out? I mean, when is the last time a company has early released good news? Think about it. Okay. Now, we had DDD a couple of weeks ago or last week, early release during the day. Now, they early released saying they were not going to make it. They didn't release the numbers. Twitter actually tweeted out, somebody tweeted out, not Twitter, but of course, where would they get the numbers from if they didn't get them from Twitter? So somebody tweeted out those numbers, letting everybody know that the earnings were going to be bad. And of course, the stock crumbled. Now, of course, this is what I talk about all the time. Yet we have a legislation, a president, a government that wants to rule everything. Guys that have a license can't say certain things without prior approval. Okay? People that have that are in the business, depending on what their status is, cannot talk about things because they cannot take it against the public. Okay? Doesn't the public, don't we always get screwed? Is it not enough that they have every other way to stick it to you? And now they start out with these early releases on earnings, okay, because they know it's going to be bad news. So they're not looking out for your best interest. They're looking out for their own. They're looking out to protect their own stock. So you're going to tell me that somebody did not know that this was happening. I mean, the Badger and I talked about this earlier in the week, okay, about, you know, that Bernie Madoff and the whole flash grass. I mean, you mean to tell me that those investigations took years to find out? I can tell you right, I could have told you exactly what was happening. If they would have said, we're going to announce earnings, we would have known. But of course, they catch everybody off guard. And what do you think about that? Is that something that we feel is fair? Okay, I think it kind of stinks. Of course, it goes in the same thing as being able to release information. You know, when you're a big trader, I won't name any names, but of course, we know who I'm talking about. But, you know, when you're a big trader and you're going to go on and buy a billion shares of Apple, okay, and then tell everybody, and then tweet to the world. Oh, tweet again. How about that? Tweet to the world that you are now accumulating stock in Apple. You didn't really think that people were going to jump up and buy. You didn't think people were going to follow you. You didn't think you commanded enough respect. And if you didn't think that, why did you believe that you needed to tweet it up? You can't have it both ways. Okay? We can't have it where we're right if we're right and we're right if we're wrong. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And that, to me, is a worse act than many of the things that we've seen guys go to jail over. Okay? You know, they put some guys back in the old days from the floor in jail for clipping off a few million bucks. And don't get me wrong, I don't forgive it and I don't say it was okay, but I am saying that here, this transaction's going to be in the billions. Okay? And this was a deliberate transaction that did it for the greed of the company. Okay? Unless somebody can prove to me that my theory is wrong, okay, that they didn't know that this was going out, but who should have the numbers? These numbers should be held tighter than the Oscars. Now, nobody knows those numbers, so how are we going to say or believe that they didn't know? That's what I can't figure out, because to me, it makes no sense. It shows no sense of logic. So they're going to say that it was an accident and they're going to sit there. But of course, eventually, somehow, somebody's going to crack. There'll be a whistleblower and somebody will come out and, you know, so there'll be a reward. You know, somebody will get a payoff. And of course, then the truth will come out. The truth will set you free only if it has to. Okay. So just remember that the next time you see one of these guys do this and you hear about compliance and regulation and all this BS that it only applies to the average guy. It doesn't apply to everybody. And to me, I find that to be a problem as well. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out the new Bubba Report. Our second edition is coming out tomorrow. And once you get hooked up for it, all you have to do is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for it. In the meantime, we're going to spend the rest of the day with Bill Whittle, because I think he's got a lot to say as well. And I like to listen to him as well. So here we go. We'll step out for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here right after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you today. And As I talked about in the first segment, and we had yesterday, we were with Mr. Bill Whittle. I want to go ahead and continue with Bill because I think he's got some good things and interesting things to say. So let's get back to Mr. Whittle right now.
When you talk to young people about George Washington, ask them to describe George Washington. What would they say? Well, they'll say, if you ask them, say, well, he had a frilly shirt and he had a tri-corner hat on and a powdered wig and he had kind of old stockings and a waistcoat and he just looks like an old guy and he's carrying a musket of some kind, some ancient old rifle. Yeah, that's pretty much, that's what George Washington looked like. But that's not what George Washington looked like to the people that knew George Washington. That's what George Washington looks like to us 250 years later. You're going to look a little stupid 250 years from now. You may not believe me, but take my word for it. That little hoodie is going to look pretty absurd somewhere around 100 years from now. 200 years from now, you're going to look like a caveman. And 250 years from now, people are going to laugh at you because of how you're dressed. So what I said to them was this. Not many people know this, but during the Revolutionary War, George Washington snuck a message through enemy lines. He sent a message to London, England, at who he's been at war with for 6-7 years now. And the message was very simple, and it was to a tailor in London. And George Washington sent a message, and the message, I got it almost memorized. It was very simple. He said, I would like to purchase 4 waistcoats in the latest designs using the most fashionable colors that are currently available. I would like the buttons to be as ornate as possible without looking ostentatious. What will that cost? And I'll send you a check. Why did he send that message to London while he's at war in the Revolutionary War? Why did he go to a London tailor? Well, because George Washington was probably the best dressed man on planet Earth. He very likely was the best dressed man on planet Earth, and he thought being president of a new republic of hicks and hayseeds meant it's especially important that I be the best dressed man on planet Earth. So I say to high school kids, if George Washington were standing next to me today, George Washington would not be wearing a tri-cornered hat, powdered wig, frilly collar, waistcoat, and stockings. If George Washington were standing next to me today, he was 6'4", but he was 6'4" when everybody was 3-4 inches tall. He'd be 6'6". He'd be wearing a $20,000 Armani suit. He'd have a $900 Hermes shirt. He'd have $2,000 shoes. He'd have an $800 haircut. And he'd be holding an AR-15 with a laser target designator because George Washington was a swinging, deadly dude. That's who George Washington was. George Washington here today would look like money because he was money. He understood the power of it. He understood the power of the image. That's who George Washington is. If he were standing here today, he wouldn't be dressed like that. He'd be dressed in a $20,000 suit. And I thought to myself, how do we get this idea across to young people? Because the people that knew George Washington wanted him to be king. They'd fought an entire war against kings. And the first thing they wanted to do was make him king because he was so overwhelmingly glamorous and interesting and sexy and cool. He was every single celebrity you know today rolled into one, and he was the founder of this nation. They wanted him to be king. They wanted to refer to him as Your Excellency. He said, no, you will call me Mr. President. We're all equals here. When people hear this, when young people hear this, they start to reimagine the entire thing. The whole thing becomes new again. George Washington in a $20,000 Armani suit with an $800 haircut is accessible to them in a way that an old guy in a powdered wig and a tri-corner hat isn't. And you can do this for all of it. So if I were going to tell the story of George Washington today, I'd do what they did in the Virgin Safety video. I'd have a guy standing there in the tri-corner hat with the wig and the waistcoat and everything. I'd have him standing there with a musket, and then I would have 3 of the hottest young women on earth, and they live in the town I live in. They're in Los Angeles. I see them every day. And they would walk up to this model, this 6'5" model, and they would grab this outfit, and they'd just pull it off. It'd be a breakaway costume, and he'd be standing there, this tan buff 6'5", 35-year-old super god wearing a pair of boxer underwear, and these women would circle around him, and they'd start to put him in this Hermes suit, and they'd put a $9,000 watch on his hand, and they'd do the cufflinks, and Washington would do the James Bond cuffling pull. You know how it is. You come out of action, it's like, yeah. He'd do one of those. They'd put a little mousse in his hair, and they'd mess him up, and they'd say, that's who the father of this country was and is and always will be. That's who he is. It's not who he was, that's who he is. And that's why they worshipped him. And when he said, no, I'm not going to be your king, that's why we love the guy. That's why we love the guy. That's the power of reimagining these things. And you can do this all the time. You can especially do it by using the language of the pop culture. And using the language is very, very important. I was at an event in Phoenix, and afterwards, during the Q&A period, this is when I really started to think about this messaging idea. During the Q&A period, a young woman, probably 16-year-old woman from the local high school said, Hey, Bill, I have a question for you. We want to start a tea party group at our high school, and we wonder if you had any ideas. I said, I do have some ideas. My first idea is, whatever you do, do not call it a tea party group. Under any circumstances, don't call it that. Forget about the fact that the tea party's been unfairly demonized. You talk to young people about a tea party, and they see a bunch of little old women sitting around drinking tea. They don't know that the actual Boston Tea Party was a bunch of college kids who were drunk out of their minds, basically, and utterly incensed about the fact that somebody had put a charge on their Wi-Fi, basically, a one-cent tax on tea. These guys got liquored up. They can't charge us for Wi-Fi. They went out there and trashed the king's boat, and they threw the tea overboard. They can relate to that, but they can't relate to this idea of a tea party. Tea party is very delicate. It's something old people do. I said, if I were you, I would print up a little brochure, and the brochure would say that at 4 o'clock on Tuesday in room 228, there will be the first meeting of the Rebel Alliance. And I could see from that young lady's look, I could see it. She just lit up. And she lit up because for the first time ever, an actual conservative was speaking to her in a language that she understood. I'm speaking the language of Star Wars, and that's not a trivial thing. How do we expect the American people to let us run the country if we don't even understand our own mythology? We don't deserve to run the country if we can't speak the language of the American people. My friend Jeremy Boring said something that was extremely provocative and made me very angry, but it's really true. He said, on some level, Barack Obama is more American than Mitt Romney. I said, come on. He said, no. Barack Obama knows The Simpsons. Barack Obama knows Family Guy. Barack Obama has downloaded songs from iTunes. Barack Obama hangs out with Beyonce. This is the language that Americans speak today. And if we can't speak this language, not only are we not going to have a chance to rule this country, or govern the country, I should say, we don't deserve to. So I said, start the first meeting of the Rebel Alliance. She said, well, what do I tell people if it just says the Rebel Alliance? And I said, if somebody comes up to you and says, what is this Rebel Alliance thing, what you need to do is look right at them and say, this isn't for you. What do you mean it's not for me? No, this isn't for you. You're not cut out to be a member of the Rebel Alliance. You don't know that. Maybe I am. What do you mean I'm not cut out to be a member of the Rebel Alliance? No, you have to understand, look, if you're going to be a member of the Rebel Alliance, you have to understand that on our best days, we're outnumbered 100-1. You don't have the social strength to be outnumbered the way we're outnumbered every day. On our best day, we're outnumbered 100-1. You have to be smart. You have to understand that things that look like they might be true maybe not are, in fact, not true. As a matter of fact, it's only through a lifetime of study of these advanced Jedi skills that allows just a handful of us to get into these beat-up X-Wing starfighters, these pieces of junk, and get up there and fly through wave after wave of incoming TIE fighters, roll down into that Death Star trench, avoid the incoming laser blast, pickle off a couple of photon bombs, put it into a vent the size of a pie dish, and get the hell out of there before this Death Star blows up and takes all of this with it. You'd better hope that we're successful while you're sleeping, because if we are not, you are going to wake up one day and they're going to be roasting rats over burning tires in the streets. So if you think you can handle this Rebel Alliance thing, be prepared, because it ain't easy. And you say that to somebody and you watch what happens to that meeting of this so-called Tea Party and that little Phoenix event thing. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about freedom. We're talking about rebellion against authority. We're talking about what makes this country great. We're talking about, leave me alone, get out of my face, step off, don't tell me what to do. This is mine, I own it. That Millennium Falcon belongs to me. It doesn't belong to the Empire, it's mine. I paid for it, I built it, I risked my life for it. That's my ship. Leave me alone. I'm a good guy. I don't need to be told what to do. Get out of my way. And all of a sudden, man, they are right there. They're right there because you're speaking their language.
And they are speaking your language. And what do you think? Okay. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. And you got to be ready and you got to step up. And if you're not, you know, then you should be thinking about something else, because, you know, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle. We've said that often here. I don't really care what side, but do something. Okay. Make something happen. Be proud. That's what you should be. But I'm more proud now of what's going on, and I'm proud of the Bubba Report that we've now brought out. It's something that we put out once a month for you, at least once a month. $99 a year. I want you to check it out. All you have to do is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for it. That is the Bubba Report. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
Let me see what spring.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you, and I'm having a good time with Bill Whittle. What do you think? You enjoying it? Let's check it out and get back to Bill Whittle.
So, look, when it comes time to messaging, one of the things that we can do with the progressives is we can just steal their language. They stole our language. They call themselves liberals. There's nothing liberal about today's liberals, nothing liberal about them at all. I am, in fact, I don't mean to be getting into sophistry or split hairs with you, but I'm very clear on this. I am a conservative because I am trying to conserve classical liberalism. That's what I'm trying to do. Classical liberalism, the liberalism of the founders, is the idea of private property, individual rights, coupled with individual responsibility, fighting an entire empire because they decided to put a 1 cent tax on tea because we don't like other people taking our money. We think we can spend our money better than the king can. All of these ideas about the American founding that we value as conservatives are fundamentally liberal ideas, and the so-called liberals, who are actually big state socialist collectivists, are simply another brand of elitists who believe that only the smart people should have the power and everybody else will do what they tell them to do for their own good, of course. For their own good, of course. This progressivism is not new. The idea of a small of elite people ruling everybody else and parceling out little garbage iPhones and garbage apartments and garbage transportation and garbage housing to keep them happy so that they keep them in power is ancient. It goes back to the Romans, predates the Romans. It's empires, it's pharaohs, it's shahs, it's emirs, it's all this other stuff. There's only one original idea in all of human history, and that's the idea of limited government and large people, large individual people. So I don't call them liberals anymore because they're not. I just don't call them liberals. They're not. But I do steal some of their language. Why are you conservative, they'll say to me. And I'll say to them, I'm a conservative because my commitment to diversity. You Republicans, no, you Republicans, what do you mean, you Republicans with diversity? No. How can you possibly be the party of diversity? We're the party of diversity. Just look at us. African Americans for Obama, Asians for Obama, gays for Obama, women for Obama, Loch Ness Monsters for Obama. We've got a little website and a place to donate. We're the party of diversity. And I say, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're the party of tribes. You're the party of interest groups. You're the party of one part of America set against another part of America. You're the party that says if you don't toe the line on abortion or global warming, not only are you out of the club, but we're not even going to be your friend anymore. When I say I'm in favor of diversity, I'm talking about the real diversity, because there's only one kind of diversity when you get right down to it, ladies and gentlemen, because nobody in this room agrees on everything. When you get down to brass tacks, every single one of us is a political party of one. The diversity that I celebrate as a conservative is the diversity of the individual person, and that's what real diversity is, and that's why I favor it. I don't think that if a black person disagrees about spending, he's suddenly not really black anymore. If a woman is against abortion, she's not actually a woman anymore. I'm not the person who's telling you that your entire identity as a human being, forget about your political identity, is dependent on you agreeing with all the things that put me in power. I don't believe that at all. I believe that people should be able to disagree on everything. That's the great strength of this country, is the disagreement. It's not unity. Forget unity. It's about disagreement and argument. That's what makes this country strong. The ultimate diversity is the individual. I am an individualist. You are a collectivist. We can use words like liberal and conservative and Republican, Democrat till the cows come home, but let's get down to brass tacks. For example, if we're talking about abortion, let's not say pro-life or pro-choice, okay? These are advertising terms. These are terms that we use to wrap our idea in advertising so that if I'm pro-life, that means you must be pro-death. Or if I'm pro-choice, that must mean that you're pro-slavery. No. If we're going to talk about abortion, let's talk about abortion in a way that makes sense. Are you pro-abortion or anti-abortion? It's the procedure. So let's just speak honestly about what we're talking about and get rid of these advertising terms. So I don't say Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal. I say, are you an individualist or are you a collectivist? Which one of these two things are you? If you think that we all have an obligation to pay for each other's health care, that's a fair statement of collectivism. I believe we should be responsible for our own needs with assistance for limited periods of time when we can't help ourselves, but we have a responsibility to do for ourselves. That's my position. And when you get down to this sort of thing, we get into positions of real clarity. Real clarity. Because, I'll say, for example, I am 100% in favor of free health care being given to everyone. 100%. What kind of a jerk would I have to be to deny people free health care? What kind of a monster would I have to be to deny people free health care? I'd have to be a Republican conservative monster, I guess, right? To be mean enough to deny suffering people free health care? I'm 100% in favor of free health care to everybody. The problem is, health care isn't free. If it were free, I'd be in favor of giving it to everybody, but it's not free. It costs money. It costs a lot of money. Cardiac surgery is not free. When you're talking about four of the most experienced, highly educated people in the world surrounded by a team of specialists and enough equipment to buy an entire village anywhere else in the world, this is not only not free, this is very expensive. So since it's not free, why don't we talk about who's going to pay for it? And once we start talking about who's going to pay for it and how it's going to get paid for, we are no longer fighting on their grounds. Now we're fighting on our grounds. Now we're talking about what is the most efficient way, what is the best way, what is the most responsive way, what is the value of competition applied to healthcare, because we see what happens with competition applied to electronics, for example. And now, since we're not talking about free healthcare anymore because there's no such thing as free healthcare, now we're going to win the argument, because now the question isn't about whether it's free or not. The argument is about what's the best way to deliver it, but we don't get there until we say to them, if it were free, of course I'd be in favor of giving it to people. If you could print Cadillacs out of a factory, just print them out, and there was no cost for raw materials, labor, the energy, nothing, of course I'd be in favor of everybody having a Cadillac. Of course I would be. But they can't, so you can't. So let's talk about what we actually can do. And when you get people out of those trenches, you start to win arguments, because Cadillacs aren't free. Somebody's going to have to pay for them. And somebody's going to have to pay for the health care, which means that somebody's going to be taking money from some people and giving it to somebody else. And now we've got the core of the argument, and that argument we can win, because we didn't just walk into their minefield and their machine gun nest about, why are you guys against free health care? I'm in favor of free health care. I think free health care is fantastic. But there is no free health care. I'd like to be able to fly through the room, too. That'd be lovely. And I'm in favor of anyone who can do it, do it. But if you can't, you have to deal with the fact that we have to walk sometimes. And now we're starting to win the argument, because we're getting down to the language. We're getting down to the brass tacks. And one final thing I think I'll say and get into before I close here, and that is this. The one thing you have to understand about the left today is that the left has one currency and one currency only. They don't have history, because the history of collectivism is the history of between 100 to 200 million people killed by their own big governments. People call us Nazis. They call us, the small government, gun control, the small government armed the people, those people. They call us Nazis. Nazi is a German acronym. It stands for National Socialist NSDAP, National Socialist Deutschland Arbeiterpartei. It basically means National Socialist German Workers' Party. That's what Nazi is an acronym for. You can't spell Nazi without National Socialist Workers' Party. They are a large state, gun-controlled, free healthcare for everybody, monolithic, single leader with the logos, big state solution that killed 12 million people at least, not including the war casualties. You have the Soviet Union, which wasn't called communist, was called the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They starved at least 10 million people to death and probably shot another 20 or 30 million people. What's a few million to bring us workers' paradise in the world? The Chinese communists starved 50 million people to death for their ideology. Throw in 7 or 10 million people killed by socialism in Cambodia and another few million in South America and all the people Castro's killed and all the rest of them. You got between 100 and 200 million actual people who have died because of your philosophy of collectivism. And you don't get to say, well, no, that was a bad guy. They didn't do it right. How many hundred million people do we have to kill before you get it right? Maybe the problem isn't that they didn't do it right. Maybe the problem is if you believe that certain people should have absolute power over the collective, it's going to automatically bring the worst, most brutal, most violent, murderous people to the top. How many people are we going to have to kill before we start to realize that maybe this isn't the best idea after all? Knock their unearned moral superiority out from underneath them. And the third rail of American politics, and I'm going there right now, is this race issue. This idea that we're racist, that Republicans and conservatives are racist. Let me tell you who the real racists are, okay? This entire population of black Americans has for four generations now been enslaved by the idea that you don't have to work, except we want you to work for 1 hour every 2 years. That's all we want. We're going to give you crap food, crap housing, crap transportation, crap cell phones, and all we want out of you is 1 hour's work every 2 years to keep us in power. So let's do a little history, because they don't like history. History is unfortunate for them. You want to talk about race in America? Let's go back to the basics.
And we're going to step out here for a break as Bill gets into his theory of what's going on. And I think that it's interesting, and it's kind of the way that the entitlements have been built. But I do want you to check out our friends at Thinkorswim, the best broker that I have ever found, built by traders for traders. It is the software of choice of the Badger and myself. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. You are listening to Bill Whittle talking on his conservative message for the youth. I think it's important that we do educate the youth. So we're going to stop by here for a break and come back with Bill right after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich will be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich, and here I am hanging out with Bill Whittle. So let's get back to see what Bill's got to say.
You don't have to work, except we want you to work for 1 hour every 2 years. That's all we want. We're going to give you crap food, crap housing, crap transportation, crap cell phones, and all we want out of you is 1 hour's work every 2 years to keep us in power. So let's do a little history, because they don't like history. History is unfortunate for them. You want to talk about race in America? Let's go back to the basics. After the Civil War was over, which was launched by Republicans, the Republican Party was founded to eliminate slavery in America, and the Democratic candidate in both 1860 and 1864, especially in 1864, George McClellan, said, why don't we just call the Civil War a draw? Come back in, keep the slaves, we'll just say it never happened. All of those protesters turning those hoses on those people in Selma, Alabama, the people who were the governors and the policemen sicking those dogs on those black protesters were Democrats. They were Democrats. All of them were Democrats. The Jim Crow laws were written by Democrats. All of this stuff was written by Democrats. But let's get down to brass tacks about race in America. At the turn of the 1900s, the turn of the previous century, there was a gigantic debate in the 30 or 40 years after the Civil War, an enormous debate about the future of black Americans in this country. And the debate was headed by two people. On one hand was W.E.B. Du Bois. I think it's pronounced Du Bois. It wants to look like Dubois. But anyway, W.E.B. Du Bois had a belief that we should take from white America, we should demand from them a series of concessions and a series of economic benefits, and that these economic benefits would be distributed, by his term now, by the talented 10th, by the educated 10% of the black population that would distribute it to the rest of the black population. We would demand it through guilt and through threats and all these other things, and we, talented 10th, the 10th of us, the smart 10th, would give it to the rest of the black population. That was his position. On the other side was Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington said, no, we have to go back to the people that we used to work for as slaves, and we have to be farmers because we have to develop our own economy. We have to develop our own resources. We have to be farmers so that our sons can be mechanics, so that their sons can be doctors. We don't have a right to ask for or demand respect. We're going to earn respect. And Booker T. Washington at his Tuskegee Institute produced black students whose GPA was far higher than white students in America, far higher, and had a lower out of wedlock birth rate. They had a much lower out of wedlock birth rate. Their test scores were higher, and when the Tuskegee Airmen entered World War II, they were given third-rate training, second-rate equipment. They're the best fighter pilots of the war. They never lost a bomber because Booker T. Washington realized that the way to eliminate racism and prejudice is not through demands, it's through excellence. It's through the unassailable excellence of their performance. That was the America that we could have had. That was the America that we should have had. It's the America we deserve to have. It was the America of one of the greatest Americans who ever lived, Booker T. Washington, who said to black America, if we become victims, we are going to stay victims. We must prove that we are not only the equals of these people, we are their betters. We will enter the society as equals. And America made a choice, and we have this choice in front of us today. So I don't want to hear anything about how Republicans are racist. We are the people that believe that black Americans should have the right to live the same right as anybody, any other individual in this country. The right to determine your own destiny. The right to be a person who determines the course of his own life through his own actions, his or her own ability to work or not work, and not just sit there for the rest of your life and wait for the government to send you a check so that you can just be a piece of wood that floats down a river. That's the choice that was made in this country. That's the choice we're facing today. I will not hear it. I will not hear it. That is the racism. It's the racism of the left that looks at black Americans as a voting plantation. I won't hear it. I know my history. I know what Booker T. Washington was saying, and I saw it work. I saw his test scores, I saw his out of wedlock rates, and I saw his fighter pilots in World War II. I won't hear it. And if you take away their unearned moral superiority, all they have left is the evidence of their policies, and that evidence is murder and failure. Period. End of discussion. It's over. So, let me close with this. We have to get in this fight. We have to make movies. We have to give people something that they can connect to. Young people have to see pictures and movies where the good guy has our values. It's not about our values, it's just a good guy who has our values. It's got to be galling for the left that a big leftist like Matt Damon, who's a big gun control guy, makes his living by running around shooting guns at people. It's got to be a little annoying for them, I would imagine. Matt Damon is the kind of a leftist who says things like this. I'm a movie star. I'm very rich. I think we should raise taxes on the American people. I'm going to get hit worse of anybody. Wow, Matt, you are an incredibly advanced, spiritually advanced, magnificent, noble man. However, unfortunately, Matt, I work in show business as well. So let me just point out a few things. First of all, if you go home with a $7 million paycheck instead of a $9 million paycheck for 6 weeks' worth, that's the kind of sacrifice I could find a way to live with. That's number one. Number two, I know, and you know, they don't know, but we know that when MGM makes a movie starring Matt Damon, they don't write a check that says, pay to the order of Matt Damon $9 million. They write a check that says, pay to the order of MD Productions $9 million, and that every single part of your life is owned by your production company. You don't pay a dime of tax on any of that stuff. Your production company writes you a check that's enough for you to be able to buy a pack of gum at the airport, and you get paid the absolute minimum amount of money that you can get because all the rest of it is tax-free, and at the end of the day, you and the rest of you limousine liberals up in the hills of Hollywood do the same thing that these knuckle-dragging conservatives out in Dubuque, Iowa do, which is tell their tax attorneys what is the least I can pay and not break the law. You don't get to stand here, Matt, and tell me you're a better person than me by being the kind of hypocrite that does everything that we do and still wants to wear this badge of magnificence. Oh, I'm the person who'll suffer the most. Raise taxes on everybody. Project Head Start is being underfunded. Raise taxes on everybody. You know what, Matt? If you really like Project Head Start, why don't you write them a check for $9 million? Why don't you write them a check? They'll take the money. Why don't you write them a check? Why are you making a gun put to the head of everybody else out in this audience and everybody else out in the country, making them pay for it? Why don't you just write a check? These people, if you raise their taxes on them, they're not going to have a college education fund, or they're not going to take that vacation, or they're not going to get to build that extension to their house. They don't get to go home with $7 million instead of $9 million. I don't buy it, Matt. I don't buy it. I'm one of you. I know what kind of people you are. I am a daywalker, Matt. I'm a vampire that walks in the daylight, and my job is to slay other vampires because I know how the system works. You do not get this unearned moral superiority. You do not get the unearned moral superiority of saying Free Tibet by having a Free Tibet bumper sticker on your Prius. You know why? Because if you have a bumper sticker that says Free Tibet on your Prius, that doesn't free Tibet. It doesn't do the slightest thing to free Tibet. If you really want to free Tibet, and I do, then maybe you ought to take off that Free Tibet bumper sticker and put on one that says United States Marine Corps. Because if you really want to free Tibet, that's how it's going to get done. So you pull away this unearned moral superiority, this posturing, they've got nothing left. Here's the bad news and the good news, ladies and gentlemen. I know we've been through a rough 5 years, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. I want to use the pop culture to be special forces. People like you have to hold the line and win elections. You have to stay out there. You have to do the ground game. You have to win elections. You have to get out the vote, all that stuff. That's trench warfare. That's holding the line. I am tired of losing territory to these people. I'm sick of it. I'm done. I don't want to hold the line. I want to get some ground back. I want a special forces of cultural warriors that blow up an ammo dump 40 miles in the rear, where they are absolutely sure they have everything iced, and when they turn around and look at it and go, what the hell's that, and converge on that target, now all of a sudden a bridge disappears and goes into the river on the other side of the map. I want to be back there messing up their headquarters. I want to be sabotaging everything they believe. I want to make conservatism cool and sexy because it is cool and sexy. We believe in loud guns and fast cars and hot women, and we believe that everyone should have 5 houses if you work hard enough, and we have 6 flags on the moon, and if you want to do something, you should be able to do it so long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. That's what I believe. What do they believe? What's their vision for America's future? A bunch of people sitting around thatched huts in carbon-neutral construction, walking around each other, pulling parasites off of each other around a burning cow pie, eating their sustainable algae cakes, raising money for the Guatemalan water snake. Are you actually trying to tell me that these are equal visions that we can sell to the American people? Please stop it. I've had enough. I'm done.
And that was Bill Whittle, and I thought his message was pretty loud and clear, and I'd love to hear your opinions. Just email me at bub@thebubbashow.org. And in the meantime, when you get to thebubbashow.org, get hooked up for our new newsletter. $99 a year gets you me, Shalady, Keith Bliss, the Badger, and all of our writing and the Bubba proprietary indexes. Go check it out at thebubbashow.org. We'll see you all tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. Same time, same station tomorrow. Good night, everybody. Take care.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.